Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text 23 and 24. I'll do 23 by myself, and then 24 we can do responsively. Okay?
Iti guratamad bhavad san. No, I said we will do 24 responsibly. 23 I will do myself. It has no purport. So let me try that again. Iti guratamad bhavad sanavrita svayam prabhu aste patikshams tajjanma hare veranu bandhakrit.
Translation. Shukdeva Goswami said, deliberating in this way, Kamsa, although determined to continue his enmity toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead, refrained from the vicious killing of his sister. He decided to wait until the Lord was born and then do what was needed. Text number 24.
Asina samvisham stishtan. Bunjana parit. Paryatan mahim chintayanu rishkesham apashyat tanmayam jagat ashina samvisham stishtan punjana paryatan mahim Chintayano Rishikesham Apashyatanmayam Jagat Asina Samvisham Stishtan Bunjana Padyatan Mahim Chintayano Rishikesham Pashyatanmayam jagat.
Please chant. Ladies, please.
Ashina Sambisham Stishta.
Thank you. Any other on the men's side would like to chant? No. Okay. Synonyms. Iti, thus. Thinking in the above mentioned. Excuse me, I'm on the wrong verse. Let's go to 24. Sorry about that. Ashina. While sitting comfortably in his sitting room or on the throne. Samvishan. Or lying on his bed. Tishtan. Or staying anywhere. Bunjana. While eating. Pariyatan. While walking or moving. Mahim. Am I in the wrong? Mahim. On the ground. Going hither and thither. Chintayanaha. Always animically thinking of Rishikesham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of everything. Apashyat, observed. Tatmayam, consisting of Him, Krishna, and nothing more. Jagat, the entire world. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. While sitting on His throne, or in His sitting room, while lying on His bed, or indeed while situated anywhere, and while eating, sleeping, or walking, Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord Rishikesha. In other words, by thinking of his all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. Please repeat, while sitting on his throne, or in his sitting room, while lying on his bed, or indeed, while situated anywhere, and while eating, sleeping, or walking, Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord Rishikesha. In other words, by thinking of his all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. Purport. Srila Rupa Goswami has described the finest pattern of devotional service as anukulyena Krishna nushilanam, or cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably. Kamsa, of course, was also Krishna conscious, but because he regarded Krishna as his enemy, even though he was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, his Krishna consciousness was not favorable for his existence. Krishna consciousness, favorably cultivated, makes one completely happy. So much so that a Krishna conscious person does not consider kaivalya sukham, or merging into the existence of Krishna, to be a great gain. Kaivalyam narakayate. For a Krishna conscious person, even merging into the existence of Krishna or Brahman, as impersonalists aspire to do, is uncomfortable. Kaivalyam narakayate tvadasha pur akasha pushpayate. Karmis hankered to be promoted to the heavenly planets, but a Krishna conscious person considers such promotion a will-o'-the-wisp, good for nothing. Durdanteyendriya kala sarpa patali prot kata dams trayate. Yogis try to control their senses and thus become happy, but a Krishna conscious person neglects the methods of yoga. He is unconcerned with the greatest of enemies, the senses, which are compared to snakes. For a Krishna conscious person who is cultivating Krishna consciousness favorably, the happiness conceived by the karmis, jnanis, and yogis is treated as less than a fig. Kamsa, however, because of cultivating Krishna consciousness in a different way, that is, inimically, was uncomfortable in all the affairs of his life, whether sitting, sleeping, walking, or eating. He was always in danger. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. A non-devotee or atheist who cultivates God consciousness by trying to avoid God in everything. For example, so-called scientists who want to create life by a combination of chemicals regard the external material elements as supreme. Such scientists do not like the idea that life is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. As early stated in Bhagavad Gita, mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta. The living entities do not arise from a combination of material elements such as earth, water, air, and fire, but are separated portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one can understand the position of the living entity as a separated portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by studying the nature of the living entity, one can understand the nature of the Supreme Godhead, since the living entity is a fragmental sample of the Godhead. But because atheists are not interested in God consciousness, they try to be happy by cultivating Krishna consciousness in various unfavorable ways. Although Kamsa was always absorbed in thoughts of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was not happy. A devotee, however, whether sitting on a throne or beneath a tree, is always happy. Srila Rupa Goswami resigned from office as a governmental minister to sit beneath a tree, yet he was happy. Tyakta Turanam Ashesha Mandalapati Sri Nim Sada Tuchavat. This is from the Sad Goswami Astika 4. I'm not familiar with that book. He did not care for his comfortable position as minister. He was happy even beneath a tree in Vrindavan, favorably serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. For a non-devotee, the world is full of problems, whereas for a devotee, the entire world is full of happiness. Vishvam param sukayate vidhi mahendra dish cha kitayate yat karunya kataksha baiva vatham tam goram eva stumaha. So that's from the Chaitanya Chandamrita 95. This comfortable position of a devotee can be established by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yasmin stito na dukena gurun api vichalyate, from Bhagavad Gita 6:22. Even when a devotee is superficially put into great difficulty, he is never disturbed. Of course, we're talking about an advanced devotee, because usually the question will come at the end of the class, well, I see so many devotees who are disturbed, so how can that be? So we're talking about, sometimes Prabhupada doesn't put all the words in. He has said it so many times that he engages in what is called ellipsis, where he may leave out a word, but the devotee can fill it in. We know that devotees who are pure, who are dedicated, who are devoted, who are absorbed, and who are always thinking of Krishna wherever they go and whatever they do, well, those are the persons, they're never disturbed because they're in the transcendental position. They're filled with Krishna consciousness. So when you're Krishna conscious, it's like having a bulletproof vest. Just as bullets hit the vest and bounce off or they don't penetrate. Similarly, material energy, no matter what it may be, coming from the outside, lust, anger, greed, envy, whatever, does not affect such a devotee because he's always feeling the blissfulness, the peacefulness, the strength and love of Krishna within his being. Therefore, that is his bulletproof vest, if you will. So, therefore, that is really something to aspire to, because virtually no one in the world has peace. No one in the world has any real happiness, real joy, real satisfaction. Everything is so temporary. So, amagina timiranda sya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Just like to read the translation again. While sitting on his throne or in his sitting room, while lying on his bed, or indeed while situated anywhere, and while eating, sleeping, or walking, Kamsa saw only his enemy, the Supreme Lord Rishikesh. In other words, by thinking of his all-pervading enemy, Kamsa became unfavorably Krishna conscious. Omagyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur ummalita yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So this, So this verse is very instructive. It's instructive because it tells us what we should be doing and yet what we should not be doing. Kamsa was always frightened. He was always in anxiety. He was always in a state of fear. Because he knew, after he had seen Devaki glowing with light all over, he knew that she was pregnant with the one who was destined or was supposed to kill him. And Kamsa was very much afraid of Krishna. He had already been told by Narada Muni that he had been killed in a previous lifetime by Lord Vishnu when his name was Kalanemi, and he was fighting with the gods against the demigods. And sure enough, if I recall, Kalanemi, he flung a mace and it hit Garuda, and Lord Vishnu, he caught the mace before it hit Garuda, and he flung it back so forcefully at Kalanemi that Kalanemi died. So Kalanemi, being Kamsa in this lifetime, is very fearful. If you've been killed by someone in a previous life, while we may not remember it consciously, the subconscious, it does sense and it can even know this, and therefore it sends up vibrations of fear, anxiety, and consternation, and it's very, so the person, the soul, you might say, in this state is very, very restless, very shaky, very tremulous. So that's the situation of Kamsa. But the good thing about it is that who he's afraid of, it's not general fear, you know, fear of the streets or fear of getting hit by a car or stepping on a banana peel and hitting your head, or fear of being poisoned when you go to Vrindavan. Sometimes we eat some foods or drink some water which has these amoebas which are somewhat poisonous and cause various disorders and diseases. Not that kind of fear. The kind of fear he had was for a specific person. And his fear was completely localized with respect to Krishna. So when he would walk, he was always thinking, he's going to be born soon. Soon he'll be born. Soon he'll be born. Will I be able to kill him before he's born? I must kill him before he's born. So here Kamsa is debating with himself. Should he kill Devaki now while she has the babe in her womb and be finished with the babe? Or shall he wait? So here he's in a what we call somewhat rational mood, and he's considering all the cons and the pros of killing Devaki at this time. He figures that if he kills her now, when she is, first of all, she's a woman. Second of all, she's his sister, or so-called sister, family sister. Third of all, she's pregnant. And fourth of all, she's under his shelter. Fifth of all, she's imprisoned. All these things would not bring a good reputation to Kamsa. So he figured that, you know, if he kills her, it's not going to go well for him. And he might even says he might even go to hell. So suddenly he's become so much the moralist. Whereas if we go back about 8 years ago, starting from the first child that was born, he didn't think anything about those things.
the first baby that was born, at first, of course, he showed him to Kamsa, and Kamsa said, no, don't worry about it. You can. It's the eighth one that's going to kill me. And then when Narada Muni mentioned to Kamsa that the eighth one could be anyone, it could be the first, it could be first if you go count from the top going down, and it could be in the middle if you count from the below the middle and you go all the way up and around. So he said it could be any one of them, so you shouldn't take a chance. And this was done to expedite the appearance of the Supreme Lord, since Devaki and Vasudev, after their baby would be killed, they would again try to have another child in order to, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear in this world. So Kamsa was waiting. The seventh child of Devaki was falsely believed to have been a miscarriage, when actually he had been, as we know, he had been carried by Yogamaya over to Rohini. Rohini happened to have been pregnant at that time, and that that fetus was aborted to make room for Balaram. And after that happened, then Balaram stayed there. And then Krishna's appearance is coming very soon. So therefore, Kamsa, being seeing how near the birth was, that means his death could be coming very near if he doesn't kill Devaki. But then again, this reputation. Now he wants to, he has an ambition. He's a highly ambitious person, and he wants to be the emperor. This is a man who has made allies with just about every demon you can imagine. And he's especially favorable to his father-in-law. And his father-in-law is known as, can anybody remember? Huh? Jarasandha, yes. So his father, and his father is considered that at that time by most persons in India as the emperor. And as we remember in the story of the Mahabharata, the biggest person that Yudhishthir had to overcome was Jarasandha. And if Jarasandha was overcome and defeated, conquered, killed, then there would be no problem as far as getting the submission of all the other kings. This was the problem. And it was a mighty battle, and I won't go into that because it's not germane to this class. But it was amazing how Bhima fought with him, and Jarasandha fought, and they fought with clubs, and then their clubs broke, and one club after another. Then they began fighting barefisted, and they were pounding and pummeling each other. But after, I think it was 27 or 28 days, neither could win. And Bhima said to Krishna, he said, I can't defeat him. He's too powerful. What can I do? So Krishna, of course, gives him the solution. He knows everything. He knows that Jarasandha, when he was born in two parts, and then this witch named Jara, she put the two parts together and cast a spell and caused the spine to meld or merge together. And the result of that was that Jarasandha then became a whole form. And then after that, by himself, he got blessings from various sages, and also his father was very instrumental in that. But he had a weak spot in the spine. So Krishna, he took a grass leaf, and he took it and he broke it in half. And immediately Bhima caught the thought, and the result was is that that's what he did. He threw him down on the floor and somehow got his leg up and tore him in parts. So that's how Jarasandha was killed. And the point being is that he had to be killed for Yudhishthir to eventually mount the throne as the emperor of the entire world. So Kamsa wanted this position. He wanted to be the emperor. And he wanted it fiercely. And he was willing enough to be so barbaric, so savage, that the first six children of Devaki, he would take by the legs and then bash it, his head on the on the stone floor. Now, where was his morality then? That's a question that might be asked. Where was the morale? Here he's showing such morality, and then he wasn't thinking, well, Devaki, this is a newborn baby. You don't smash newborn babies' head on stone floors. You're not going to become very, very admirable. Of course, his justification could very well have been that
one of these children is going to kill me, so I have to kill the child before I kill it grows up to kill me, or somebody sneaks it out of the prison in some manner of form. So anyway, here we have another situation, is that those six babies were all cursed. They had been cursed by Hiranyakashipu to be killed by their father, who at that time was Kalanemi. So Kalanemi was now Kamsa, who would now kill those six children of Devaki. And that's exactly what happened. So the curse had to go through in some way or another, and therefore we have to understand that when someone is destined to die without doubt and has been cursed by a very powerful person, then Krishna simply allowed, you see, the curse to go through, and the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance that was literally pressing, pushing, badgering Kamsa at this point was so powerful that he couldn't even reason. The only thing he could think about at this point is that I'm not going to let these children kill me. And then one after another he killed them, and he felt relieved, you see. But now we have a little different situation. Krishna has not been destined to die. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and Krishna is here to kill Kamsa. And Kamsa can virtually know that Krishna has come by the glowing effulgence that Devaki has been manifesting, and therefore he is very frightened. So here we see what we can learn from him is that he hates Krishna because Krishna represents a threat to his blinding ambitions to be the emperor of the world. That's his all in all. I mean, he would kill those six children, and he would kill anyone, virtually, if anyone tries to stop him from achieving his ambitions. That is the nature of a very big-time, big, as Prabhupada calls them, demon. They don't have any conscience. They don't care about conscience. Why we call them demons is they don't obey the laws of God. They don't follow the laws of God. They may follow the laws at sometimes if it's convenient and comfortable for their political accomplishments. But if it's not convenient for their political ambitions to be fulfilled, then you just kill. Who cares about morality? I mean, look at Ravan. Ravan kidnapped a woman. He knew the morality. His father, his grandfather, was one of the great sages, Palustya. His father was also quite learned and knowledgeable. And one of his brothers, Vibhishan, thank you. Vibhishan was also counseling him and guiding him, but he would not listen. He wouldn't listen because he wanted to have Sita as his wife, whom he could enjoy and feel that he had made this accomplishment, this conquest. And this is the way these demons think. Everything is a matter of conquest. So, therefore, we can see in this that it is a lose-lose situation to be unfavorable. On the other hand, the very fact that Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna, even though he had hatred, we know he had hatred, but also during the process of thinking of Krishna, going to sleep and thinking of Krishna in a dream, walking and thinking of Krishna, eating and thinking, as it says here, wherever he went, whatever he did, in whatever situation he found himself, there was always Krishna on his mind, my enemy Krishna. So he was getting purified within, because anyone who is so concentrated, super saturating his mind with Krishna, has to be having some benefit. However, in spite of that fact, his hatred was still there. It was the benefits were innermost or within, not manifesting. If they were manifesting, he wouldn't want to fight with Krishna. So there was a small percentage of hostility, small percentage of anger, and a small percentage of animosity left. But within, there was enough spirituality to get him ultimately back to the spiritual world. Because you can't go there unless there's some spirituality, and by concentrating on Krishna, obviously the covering that was around the soul was obviously melting away slowly but surely. But there was some percentage still left there. So when the final battle came between Kamsa and Krishna, And they really duked it out. They really had a big, heavy-duty fight. But eventually, Krishna threw him on the ground and straddled his chest and began pounding on Kamsa's chest so vehemently, so strongly, so heavily. And Kamsa was looking at the face of Krishna. And that look, that gaze, that absorption as he was being pounded and being slowly but surely killed, that was the trick. That was all that was needed to purify him completely, because after that happened, he went back home, back to Godhead, to Vaikuntha, and in Sarupya Mukti. Yeah, he went. So who can imagine this from happening? This is so amazing. Hardly anyone could believe. But Krishna, what that tells us is that Krishna is so amazing, so powerful, so purifying, that if we simply, when we chant the holy name of the Lord, and we chant it with full concentration, that we are associating with the most wonderful, most caring, the most powerful person in existence, beyond our even ability to even be able to calculate how powerful he is. In spite of that fact that he can do so much. So the chanting of the holy name is the easiest and the recommended way for us to associate with Krishna as often as possible. Not only when we are chanting our 16 rounds, but when we are walking the street, or even when we are eating, we can still be thinking about Krishna. Even when we are working, we can move away from our desk or from our computers for a few minutes and look at a beautiful picture of Krishna, chant the holy name for a few minutes, and then get back into the service, reminding ourselves that the purpose of the work, the service, is to what? The purpose of the service is to love Krishna, serve Krishna, adore Krishna, admire Krishna. And when we step back and we look at Krishna, and we can remember that, then more new fiery motivation comes into us, and we can get back and to do the service as a love offering, and not merely do it as a duty, not merely do it as simply a perfunctory activity, as something to take up the time until the day is over, or until I can do something else. But it is the all-in-all activity. So whether we're standing in front of a computer, or whether we are cooking the food to make it into have Krishna make it into prasadam, whether we are chanting, whatever we're doing, we have to always be thinking of Krishna. Krishna continues to say in Bhagavad Gita, he says, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me, thus you will come to me without fail. Thus you will come to me. Well, I promise you this because you are my devotee and my friend. He says this many times about surrendering unto him. The purpose, the whole point of total surrender, of giving up one's body, one's mind, and one's words, the purpose of that is so to be controlled by Krishna, to be owned by Krishna, to be directed by Krishna, to be pushed in the right direction by Krishna, to be given the proper words by Krishna. When we become totally Krishna, because we're totally surrendered to him, then he takes up our position, as he did so beautifully for Srila Prabhupada. I mean, when I think about this gorgeous temple we have there, no deities like we have here. I've been traveling around for the last 3 weeks, for those who might not know, and I see the difference between even in major temples. I won't mention them because they may get upset and not invite me back. But our deities are super splendorous. There's no question about it. And when I look at them and I see the way they're being dressed, and the devotees who are giving such such loving, affectionate feelings toward them, everyone is to be congratulated that everything is being maintained just as it was when Srila Prabhupada was here. That is a great, great plus for this temple. No matter how many problems and difficulties and tribulations and trials we may have, nonetheless, these deities remain, and they are blessing all of us. That's why many of us are still here, because we come, we serve them, we try the best we can, even though we have our failings, our faults, our difficulties, but they are there to continue to maintain us, to help us, to strengthen us, to build us, so that we can ultimately come back and go back to Godhead. So as it's mentioned here, Kamsa was always thinking of Krishna. So our business is to always, the word always is used by Prabhupada so often. In that verse that Prabhupada quotes so often, which How does that go? I think it's not. It's 1866. Could somebody help me out? Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender. Yeah. So I'm giving the English translation. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I will free you from all sinful reactions. Don't fear. So that's a guarantee. He says, you abandon all varieties of these different religions. I've mentioned so many different religions and so many different types of practice throughout this discourse. And now forget about them. You just surrender to me. Give me your body. Give me your mind. Give me your thoughts. Give me your feelings. Give me your love. Give me your everything. And giving them to me, I will give you myself. And if you have myself, you have everything. There is nothing better, greater, higher, bigger, grander when you have myself. He gave himself to the gopis, and they were blissful all the time. Even when they were crying out of separation, they were even more blissful because it was love in separation. Similarly, if we make a very determined effort to try to remember Krishna more often during the day in a loving, kind, appreciative way, knowing that Krishna has given us so much, so much. I mean, he feeds us and clothes us and shelters us and guides us and directs us, gives us these books. He gave us Srila Prabhupada. He's giving us so many wonderful devotees to associate with. What a plus. You go down out in the world, you know, I was just came from the plains, you know, everybody has a new god. You know what the new god is? It's called the mobile phone. Seriously. Everybody has got their head down, like bowing, you know, as if they're praying. Yeah, praying to the mobile phone with the latest computer game. I'm serious. I'd say about at least 95% are into their computers, their mobile phones or computers, and the other 5% are usually sleeping. So we have a very wonderful, great, glorious opportunity, not only to please Srila Prabhupada, who's given so much of his time and his effort and his energy and his health, just so that we could have this wonderful life, this great, glorious lifestyle of Krishna consciousness, but we can also give pleasure to him by acquiring it and accomplishing it ourselves, and then we being blissed out will bring that blissfulness, bring that peacefulness, bring that loveness to everyone and anyone we come to in the form of book distribution, in the form of prasadam distribution, in the form of chanting, in the form of lectures, whatever way we can, so that people get turned on, people want more of it, and we give them more of it, and they become Krishna conscious, just as Srila Prabhupada enabled us, helped us to also become Krishna conscious. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Oh. Thank you so much. Are there any questions or comments that anyone would like to know? Any corrections you'd like to make? No? Not today? Next time? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm.